Hi guys, welcome back to the Nevermind Polly podcast. My name is Matt, I'm your host, and we chat to rock and metal bands from around the world. How are you doing? How are you living? I hope you're doing well. Wherever you're listening to the podcast, we appreciate you for checking out the show. My guest this time around is the excellent Moose of the band Kill the Lights. Moose is an absolute legend. Moose is a gentleman whose career I followed for a very, very long time, all the way back when he was in Bullet for My Valentine, all the way through into Kill the Lights that he's in now. Absolutely fantastic gentleman. This was a lovely conversation, and I'm really, really grateful to be given the opportunity. They have a brand new record out. It is called Death Melodies. It is out everywhere now. I highly recommend you check it out. If you're a fan of riffs, if you're a fan of metal, if you're a fan of just kind of really good banter, then listen to this podcast first and foremost. But the record is fantastic. I want to say a massive shout out to Kristen for giving us the opportunity to sit down with Moose and for just generally giving us the opportunity to do this stuff. It's really, really awesome. And yeah, thank you guys so much for the support over the last few weeks and months. It's been genuinely amazing. And we have recently just launched a brand new YouTube channel. It's called Nevermind Matt. It is nothing related to music. You've probably seen me plastering over my Instagram. It's basically me and Rebecca, obviously my wife-to-be, just going out and doing stuff, vlog-type content. So if you want to go check that out, you can. If not, just listen to the podcast. We appreciate you. And yeah, I'm going to shut up and let you guys listen to my conversation with the excellent Moose of Kill the Lights on the Nevermind Polly podcast. Let's get to it. FYI, I was pretty nervous doing this podcast. So if I do fuck up the beginning of this like intro, then yeah, I apologize. See you in a bit. Hi guys, welcome back to the Nevermind Polly podcast. My name is Matt, I'm your host, and today we are chatting to a gentleman whose career I have followed for a very long time. Is a man whose drumming has been influential on a lot of different albums, which I love. I'm chatting to the legend, that is Mr. Michael Moose Thomas, formerly known as Moose of Moose, called Moose, bloody hell, of Kill the Lights. How are you doing, sir? I'm going to shut the fuck up and let you talk. How are you?
I'm good, man. What an intro. Thank you very much. I'm quite flattered.
No, it's all good. It's all good. And I would normally say I've completed the trifecta of having three, but I've had more than three. So you're part of the Welsh, like, kind of contingent of this podcast. So I've spoken to Skindred, Funeral for a Friend, and the Blackout. So you're now, like, you've made, like, the square Illuminati of the Welsh-based band. So how's things? How are you doing? Everything all okay?
Yeah, all good, yeah. Just doing lots of press for the new album, and it's nice to hear a British accent, because all I've been doing is an American press.
Oh, bless you. Bless you. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. As we have this conversation, the second album by Kill the Lights, Death Melodies, will be out in 9 days' time. That is incredibly exciting for fans. I've been sent the record today. I've listened to it a couple of times. I've tried to get a bit of a grapple on it. It's fucking great, just throwing it out there. Just on an initial kind of couple of listings, it's got full of riffs. It's full of great bangers and things. How are you personally? How's the band feeling about the record ahead of its release?
Yeah, really just worn it out, because we've been sat on it for... I tracked Drums for Death Melody 2 years ago. So, and for obviously sure. We had the demos before that, because of COVID and stuff. So we're just like, we just really want it out and hope people enjoy it. But it's, you know, still scary at the same time, because we're like, we think it's good. But then once it's out there to the world, it's like, will other people think it's good? But the reaction so far has been, to the singles anyway, it's been quite positive.
That's the thing. I've never been in a band, mate. I've never been anything like that. But what I will say is we're having this conversation now. And luckily, this conversation will go out, obviously, as soon as the record drops. But sometimes in the world of podcasts, things like that, I can do a podcast and it won't come out for 2 or 3 months. Because, again, I get sent a promo and things, and that's kind of how the thing works. And, again, it's kind of sitting on, like, a great conversation. And then, like, you release it into the world, and everyone's like, then you get the instant feedback of, yay, this is great. Or, Matt, give up doing podcasting, you're fucking shit at it. Whatever it may be. And then it's kind of like, that's kind of that nice feeling. And then you kind of go, oh yeah, I forgot that kind of happened. Not that you'd forget an album's coming out, but do you know what I mean? It's kind of, you're so far removed from it at that point because it's been 2 years of the process and things. Is it kind of a frustration, I guess, in terms of the waiting game when it comes to being in a band?
I'm quite used to it now. Obviously, the record industry, you know, there's never really a set date for anything. Everything moves all the time. I mean, I think the original date for Death Melodies was Friday the 13th, which would have been
that's very ominous as well.
Yeah, I know. We were quite upset that we didn't manage to get that.
Of course. That would have been perfect.
Yeah, but obviously, if things got pushed back, and yeah, it's just, it doesn't get boring. It's just, we get bored.
Mm.
We, you know, we've been sat on it for so long. We've already started writing the third album.
For sure.
Yeah, so it's just, we just want to get it out and start touring.
Absolutely. And so this record comes off the back of The Sinner, which came out in 2020. It's such a weird, and I don't want to dwell too much on the pandemic and everything else, but I feel like you are a band who kind of felt a little bit unfairly because of the pandemic, because the record came out in 2020, then you were kind of obviously demoing things and doing, like writing this record, and because of knockbacks, pushbacks, things like that. It is just a case of like, it's one of those things. So I guess kind of Kill the Lights 2024, this is kind of where we brace for impact. Am I kind of in the ballpark with that? Is that kind of the game plan?
Yeah, we were quite upset, you know, releasing an album in the worst.
Yeah, worst of course.
Time you can ever release an album, but you know, everyone was asking for it. We'd signed the record deal, so you know, we just released it, and then we thought, you know, it won't last that long. We'll be touring it now, you know, and then it's the doors didn't open, and then lockdown after lockdown, and then tours that were going to go out in 2020, got put back to 21, 22. So this massive queue of touring bands. So we a brand new band. We were never going to get a chance. So we just thought, use this time off and just start writing. So yeah, but we just got it. We did feel like The Sinner was such a great album and just kind of got lost because we couldn't push it the way we should have, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a few bands, one particular band that springs to mind is Trivium, that kind of, with the fact they put out a record kind of in that pandemic time, and they just got back in the studio and rewrote it, when they were kind of able to then tour, they kind of done like a joint kind of package thing of saying, look, these are two fucking albums we've written that time. Let's just promote both the hell out of them on this record. So I guess when you guys get out to play and things, it is kind of a case of like, cool, we've now got two, like, lots of material to draw from, and obviously stuff you're already writing and things like that. How does that kind of affect building a set list? Because as a fan, like, a set list going to a gig, right, is one of the most important things. Because, yeah, you're seeing a band, but you've all got your own personal favourite songs you want to hear, and obviously being in a band, you've got songs you want to play. How does a kind of Kill the Lights put together a set list? Because for me, it'd be a fucking nightmare. And I'm just a fan trying to put together another band set list. How do you guys find that?
Yeah, it's hard. It's like picking singles off an album. Mm-hmm. You know, when you love every song on the album, you're like, oh, I want this song or this song, but what about this song? Mm-hmm. And then the other guy's like, well, I like this song. So you just, I think we find a middle ground in, okay, let's just, obviously the singles that we've released have got to be in there because we've pushed them. And then like just album tracks that we all agree on and all love, really. If it was up to me on this tour coming up now, I'd be like, let's play The Sinner in full and Death Melodies in full. Like you know, like you said, Trivium did like that double tour. I'd play them both because we've never had a chance to tour The Sinner and we've never toured Death Melodies. So but obviously... Yeah.
You know, the other band that's just popped into my head as well is Biffy Clyro done that when they released Celebration of Endings. The first night of their tour, they just played that whole album in full, which they got a little bit of stick from certain fans because they're like, I want to hear the classics. But I think that's bold as fuck. Just to be like, here's our new album in full, front to back, let's go. Like, that's just bold as hell. I love that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, when back in the day when I opened for Maiden in 2006, North America, and they played their new album, Iron Maiden, now, you know, the classic Iron Maiden, played the new album from start to finish.
Yeah, and that's mad, isn't it?
That's balls right there.
Yeah, I was about to say the brass balls on it. Fucking hell, it's good, isn't it? I love that. So as I kind of alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, I've been lucky enough to speak to a lot of kind of your peers in terms of from the South Wales scene and things like that. I kind of wanted to ask, what's your perception of growing up in South Wales? What was kind of like your kind of introduction into music and things? Because it's something I love to kind of drill down with when I get the opportunity with bands, because I like to see kind of where their trajectory kind of not falls off a cliff, but you fall in the deep end, if you like. So you'll kind of start, for me personally, I started off with sort of Green Day, Blink 182, Enter Shikari, Bullet for My Valentine, and then it fucking fell off a cliff, mate, to be honest. And then I was straight in the deep end. How does it kind of begin for you?
I was just lucky enough to have a group of friends that were into like metal, but really I found them because I found Nirvana.
Nirvana, amazing, nice.
Thank you. Yeah. And then once I was into Nirvana, I was like, oh, you like Nirvana? And there was like this little pool of friends which like Nirvana. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but from Nirvana, I just dropped off immediately. I was just like,
right, really straight in.
Everything to me. I was just like, I want it all. Yeah, I went like into the hardcore scene. I went into the punk, early 70s punk scene. I went everywhere and I was loving every. I was like, it's just like a sponge. You know, I just wanted everything. As long as it was fast, aggressive. Yeah, you know, as long as it wasn't pop music, really. Mm-hmm. I was all about it. So the faster anything, or the more aggressive, or I don't know. I just, if it was just not, if it pissed people off, I was into it.
I love that. So I wanted to kind of, because again, you've got such a wealth of kind of knowledge and experience from being in various bands for over the years and things. I wanted to kind of ask, so being in a band for 20 plus years in the industry for that long, what kind of advice would you give to bands who not necessarily are young and up and coming, but just who are trying to break out into the industry, people who aren't in bands trying to get into this industry? What is the kind of key and success to longevity? Because I think that's a really important thing, because being successful is one thing, but being successful and having longevity with that success. And obviously you've had it with multiple bands at this point. Kind of, how do you kind of, is there any kind of key? Is there any kind of cheat code? How would you kind of define that?
It just depends on the person, really. Myself, I do it for the passion. I don't do it. You know, I just do it because I love doing it. I loved it before I even played an instrument. Mm-hmm. When I was lucky enough to be able to play an instrument, I just fell in love with it even more. So if you believe in what you're doing, just keep doing it. You know, don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Because we, back in the day, we used to have record labels turning us down all the time, saying, no, you're never going to get played on a radio. And we were like, well, fuck you. We don't want to get played on the radio anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and, absolutely. And secondly, don't do it for money.
No, of course. Yeah.
You know, because as soon as money gets involved, it's game over.
Yeah.
It just changes people. And I've seen it firsthand. And just do it for the love of doing it. You know, obviously, you know, don't make yourself homeless. Get paid, but don't get greedy. Just do it because you love it. And then I just think if you keep on that track, it just naturally happens for you, you know?
Absolutely. And you know what? It's something that, doing this podcast, which again is not like being in a band, but I guess the only thing I can kind of draw a parallel and comparison point is the one thing people always ask me, who kind of, when I tell them I do a podcast, they're like, how much money do you make? And how many listeners, how many subscribers, whatever, blah, 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 you get, right? And I tell them none of that fucking matters, because I'm going to tell you this, right? Because I've won this game, right? So I started doing this podcasting content, whatever, 2016. Since then, I have managed to chat to every single person who has been in the music industry, who I personally respect, look up to, have admired their music, and you're part of that collective now as well. I can now tick you off the list and say that's someone who, you know, I've really admired the work over the years. And I met my wife to be, we're getting married in July, like through me doing this. So it's kind of like, if someone ever taps me on the shoulder and goes, what are you doing here? Well, you can't be doing this. I'm like, it's cool. I've won. I've completed, not that I had a mission, but do you know what I mean? It's kind of like I've reached that glass ceiling, smashed through it and gone, I'm just going to carry on doing until I'm told I'm not allowed to. So my question kind of there is, have you ever had a case of kind of imposter syndrome? Is that something you've ever had in the past where you've kind of, you've been in a situation, whether you're, I don't know, backstage at a festival or you're in like a record sort of meeting, anything like, and you're going, how am I here? Like, do you know what I mean? Do you ever have that? Or is it just a case of you just are, you know, Moose, the confident drummer, the confident man that we see on things?
I've had both.
Mm.
One, I don't like being told what to do.
Nice.
Says you shouldn't be here. I'll be like, well, fuck you, I'm going to prove you wrong anyway.
I think that's a Welsh mentality.
Definitely. I just think, you know, if you want to do something, you shouldn't let other people decide if you should or shouldn't do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a time in a couple of years back, I just wasn't confident at all. And I was like, am I doing the right thing? I was like going to shows and people were saying, oh, I must and stuff. I just didn't want to be there. I just felt like I shouldn't be there. I've like kind of had my time, but I was like, I've come back full circle now. And it's just, no, I'm just going to, this is what I do. This is what I've done for 20 years. You know, before Bullet, I was a drummer and a guitar player anyway. So I enjoy music and I'll keep on doing it. I don't care what anyone thinks, you know.
I love that. So I wanted to kind of ask from Kill the Lights perspective as a unit, as a band, but also from you personally, how does the creative process work in terms of creating the songs? Because some, and again, I think about it in the sense of like what I felt like music was when I was 14, right? So in my head, I'm like, all bands get into a room together, they smash the fucking shit out of their instruments, and it happens. A lot of the time, again, doing this podcast, kind of revealing the magic, a lot of the time it's internet-based and whatever. You guys are geographically kind of apart because a couple of you guys are in America and some of you in England, I believe, and things like that. How does that kind of creative process work for you guys as a band and obviously for you personally?
We love it when we're in a room together. You know, it doesn't mean playing our instruments together, just being together and just relaxing, taking a piss out of each other. And then all of a sudden, when you're in that just that comfort zone, like hanging out, Jordan or Travis will pick up a guitar and I'm like, what's that? And then James will pick up, what are you playing there? And then just that's how it goes. And then we start pulling the drums down and stuff. And obviously, pandemic, no one could go anywhere, so it was definitely a lot of file sharing and stuff like that, writing, which was cool, but it wasn't like the vibe wasn't there. It was just like there's no one to kind of, you know, is this okay, you know, because when you're on your own, you're kind of in your own box and everyone's their own worst critic, so everyone's you know what I mean, so I was just like, oh, this is shit. But once you turn into the boys, they're like, oh, this is cool. But we definitely, when the pandemic, when Canada opened first, its borders to vaccinated Americans and US, UK people, we just went to Canada for just under 2 weeks and wrote 80% of the album.
Amazing. Nice. And I think that's the thing as well. I think the expression goes, and it's true, pressure, if you put coal under pressure, it makes diamonds, right? And I feel like the same happens with people. Some of the time, if you put people in a pressure situation and gone, right, you've got a week to write a fucking record, you're more than likely, as talented musicians and a group of friends, you're going to come up with something. Do you know what I mean? And that's the thing. If you put pressure on people to like, if you give people all the time in the world, they're less likely, in my opinion, at least, to go and do that thing because they've got other distractions and whatever else. So it's kind of cool that you, like you say, the pandemic kind of forced your hand to say, right, we've got this window of time where we can go and do this thing. Let's go and do this thing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think you are right. I had a question the other day, how do you know when a song's finished? I'm like, I think it's finished when you know it's finished, because if it's like making a cake, if it sits around too long, you're going to keep prodding in and you're going to fucking ruin your cake. You know what I mean? So once everyone's happy, cool, poof, put it away and move on to the next one. Otherwise, it gets stale and then you're like, oh, maybe I'll do it. And then you're just going to mess up your shit. So just...
I had that so much when I done video, when I done like YouTube content, things like that. I would record, I don't know, like an hour's worth, and then you start chopping it and you get to 30 minutes. You keep chopping it. You're down to 20 minutes. Keep chopping. And by the end of it, you've got like 5 minutes of fucking whatever. And it's like, well, some of that stuff was good. You've just thrown out because you're being too critical and you keep touching, you keep prodding, you keep poking it, and you're left with not very much. So yeah, once it's done, put it there, leave it, don't touch it. It's done. Like, so that's really cool. I love that. I wanted to ask, because I feel like you as an artist and as a drummer and things have inspired a lot of people to pick up sticks and things like that and to get into music. Who inspires you in 2024?
Well, it's funny.
It doesn't have to be music either. Just in general, in life, who inspires you?
I don't know. I don't know where my inspiration comes from, to be honest.
For sure. That's fair. That's a valid answer as well.
I don't know. I just do it. It's like I kind of have to do it.
Yeah.
Because that's all I know to do, really. I don't know, but I had... As a new drummer, it was I really like this band called Lorna Shore.
Mm-hmm. Amazing, yeah. It's my partner's favorite band.
They're
a little bit too intense for me. I like them, don't get me wrong, but I have to be in the right kind of headspace because they're very intense.
When I first heard them, I was like, "That's not real drums. That's computer."
Yeah, for sure.
And then I saw this guy called Austin playing his. Mm-hmm. Playing it, and I was like, fuck, someone can actually play like that. And then I commented on his Instagram yesterday, or when it was yesterday for me.
Yeah.
And he messaged me back saying, "Moose, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for your drumming on The Poison." And I was like, fuck, that's awesome.
Amazing. I love that. That's so cool. I love that.
He's taken from one of my idols is Dave Lombardo. Probably the heavy metal drummer in existence. So what Dave Lombardo did for heavy metal, I think this Austin guy is taking it a step further now, and he's like the next batch of metal drummer, you know.
Absolutely love that. I love that. And it kind of leads me quite nicely into a question I was going to ask is, do you listen to kind of metal and things? Because when you're in your metal band, I guess it could kind of somewhat, some people would think, be counterproductive to listen to kind of metal. And I use this metaphor and joke before of you walk into the studio, walk into your practice room, whatever, and then the guy's like, "Oh, I found this sick riff," and you just start playing an AC/DC song because you've heard that riff and go, "This is fucking sick." But if you listen to metal, you kind of like it seeps into your psyche and whatever else. Do you listen to kind of that stuff? I take it then in your spare time, in your free time.
I listen to everything. Like one of my favorite bands is Blink-182.
Amazing, yeah. Nice.
I went to watch him in O2 last year. That's
amazing, yeah.
Awesome. I love Lorna Shore. I love stuff that's not forced down my throat. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
That's why I can never listen to the radio because it's just the same drivel on there all of the time, which is talentless stuff in my eyes, anyway.
Mm.
I really like the band Bad Omens at the moment. I think they're really good.
You know what? So I saw Bad Omens on this last Bring Me the Horizon tour, and I didn't, and again, maybe I'm getting old, I don't know. I didn't quite understand it. I can clearly see there's a lot of talent there, and I saw it live, and I was like, oh, I get it. It's like sexy metal. Like, and I felt like such a fucking idiot because I was like, why is he singing like that? It's kind of cool, but kind of weird. And I'm like, Oh, I get it, because all these fucking people are going mad for it. Obviously, I am the idiot for not seeing. And my partner was just like, "Yeah, obviously, what the fuck?" So yeah, I love it.
I saw him on that same time. I didn't get it, but now you're saying it. Okay, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's like, oh, I get it. He's obviously like this icon, and I get it. Fair enough. Cool, I get it. It makes perfect sense. You guys, Kill the Lights, are heading out on a tour and things of the UK and Europe in April and May. How do you feel about playing these new songs live? I guess it kind of is a counterintuitive question because what we sort of talked about is the fact you kind of haven't been able to go and do that much anyway in terms of the new stuff. So it's all kind of new for you guys. Is there any kind of songs you're particularly kind of looking at the set list? Again, if you don't want to tell me the actual names of the song, but like you're going, oh, that's going to be tasty to play that one live.
Yeah, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we're going to be opening with the first song of Death Melody, Hear You Scream.
Yeah, which is a fucking rager.
A face melder, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good to have Jay back. It opens with a lot of Jay vocals in there.
Yeah.
That one, the first song of The Sinner, Shed My Skin, is, I don't know, it's just, the good thing about the band is it kind of goes in waves. We can do the super heavy thing and then we can chill out a little bit. Yeah, but I don't think there's going to be much of the chill side. It's all going to be like a full-on blown assault. Because it's the first where we're just going to tear people a new bum hole, I think.
I love that. And you know what? It's always nice to and I'll just say this, I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable. You've got a very big smile on your face. You can tell that you're happy talking about the music and doing this stuff again, because like I say, 20 years in the music industry, 20 years plus in the music industry, I feel like some people it can chew up and spit back out, but you seem like you're in a good place, man. Is that the case? Are you kind of happy and upbeat about things at the moment?
Yeah, now I am. The pandemic's over. That was the worst. And then
absolutely.
I was waiting in line, and I was like, "Ah, oh, come on!" And everyone's like, "You know, yeah." But now I got this coming up, and this coming up, and this is coming up. You know, it's good. It's nice to be back. You know, and appreciate it.
Absolutely. So this is a question I like to ask my artists and my guests when I get the opportunity. Is so essentially, your agent phones you tomorrow. Your booking agent, whoever, phones you tomorrow and go, "Moose, you're heading out on tour tomorrow with the boys." What's the one thing you're double checking that you've put in your overnight bag before you leave for tour?
My passport.
Ah, see, everyone says that. And you know what? I think about that question. I'm like, obviously the passport, but is there anything else apart from the passport that you're thinking like, just like basically something that you kind of, if you, the bus leaves and you're like, oh fuck, I've forgotten this one thing, something that might help you through tour or kind of something that just, you can't kind of live without whilst on tour.
Yes.
The iPhone, nice, yeah,
no,
yeah,
yeah. It's like how old it is, a model I mean, one iPod. All of my warm up things are on here.
Oh, amazing, yeah, yeah, nice, old school, I love it.
Yeah, so if I lose this, I'll be able to warm up,
yeah,
but not as confidently as my little routine is on here. So it would be my little iPod with my little warm ups on there.
I love that. What so. Again, this is a question that I've kind of added, right? And I've asked a few artists. But again, I think my 14-year-old self reading Kerrang! Magazine and whatever else has kind of put this in subconsciously. Now I'm 31, right? So I think back in the 80s, 90s, there was a lot of kind of debauchery going on behind the stage door and things like that. What is going on in 2024 for you personally, for the band ahead of stage? Because 30 minutes, a lot of bands say to me, they go to the separate kind of areas of the room, they go into a zen space and they come together. How does it work for you as an artist and as the band as a whole? Do you kind of come together? Do you psych each other up? How does that all kind of work?
Well, I've done the debauchery.
My man.
Didn't stop in the 80s and 90s. It carried on to the early 2000s as well, I can tell you. yeah, but now I just... I'll warm up, the guys will warm up, and then, you know, that's it.
Yeah, I love it. You just get the heads on. It's like, cool, let's go tear these guys a new bum hole, as you put it earlier so eloquently.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. As soon as everyone's ready to rock and roll, that's it.
I love that. So I've got a couple of final questions for you, Moose, and I'm so, so grateful for your time. As I say, it's a huge privilege to sit down and chat with yourself, because as I say, I've been a fan of your music for a very, very long time. So a question I like to ask, I was going to bin it off in 2024. I asked every single guest in 2023 this question, but my partner was like, no, keep it in. It's, yeah, you're going to still get some good answers. I'm banking on you to give me a good answer, right? So when Spotify or Apple or Amazon or insert big corporate brand buys my podcast from me, right? What I'm going to do is rather than reinvest the money back in the podcast, I'm going to blow it all on one big festival, right? And Kill the Lights are invited to play the festival along with all the other bands who have appeared on the show. It's going to be about a week long. It's going to be lovely. It's going to be lovely eclectic bill of all different bands. We're having it in the biggest field we can physically get our hands on. Now, what I'd like to know, Moose, is what you would like to add to the dream rider of the festival. Now, there's a couple of caveat points, right? There is no financial restriction. There is no like logistical restriction. You can have literally whatever you want. So I'll give you a couple of examples of what people have said in the past. We had Josh from Cattle Decapitation say to me, I want a laundry service, which I thought was a touch of fucking genius, because he is going to be everyone's best friend. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't want clean clothes. Andy from Therapy said to me, I just want clean socks, clean underwear. I was like, yep, fine, easy, like whatever. Matt from August Burns Red, a fellow drummer, said to me, I want, this is so fucking American as well, bless him, a full-scale, like, monster truck rally set up at the festival, like, sponsored by Monster Energy Drink or something. Like, you'd be more American if you tried. We've had people say to me, I had a Norwegian band on and say they want a specific brand of Norwegian energy drink. What would you like to add? You could have whatever you would like.
Oh, do you know, you put me on the spot now because I'm not a man of, I don't buy anything for myself. I don't like it.
Well, the thing is, you can have it for yourself or you can have it for the good of everybody else. Because like I say, Josh from Cattle to Cap was like, I want a store laundry service that everyone can use, which I think is, again, a real cool thing. I had the Mario from the Blackout Problem say to me that this was, I think, to be fair, he's probably won the game. He said, I want to give everyone a free ticket who financially can't afford one. And I was like, you've won the game, my friend. But I'm still going to play the game, but you've pretty much won the game. Is there anything you'd like to add, either like yourself, for yourself or behalf of the festival?
There you go, an open bar for every punter.
An open bar. Yeah, see, that's it. Smashed it. Smashed it out of the park.
Perfect.
Moose, I've got one final question. It is a question I've asked every single artist in the last 4 years who's been gracious enough to give me their time on this podcast. It's a question that is personal to you, and it is, what is the best thing about being in a band for you?
I said to my wife today, is I never did it for the money. Now I'm getting, only now, 20 years late, I'm getting like a lot of notoriety for what I've did, and introduced a lot of people to drumming, and those people now becoming, big drummers themselves. So if I've played a little part in, anyone following their dreams, that's it for me.
I love that. I love that. Kill the Lights' new album, Death Melody, the Death Melodies, even, will be out everywhere now as people hear this podcast. Is there anything you want to say to the people listening and watching at home, mate?
Just go get it, listen to it, stream it, buy it, do whatever you like, and come out to the shows and have fun.
Lovely job. Thank you so much, mate. This has been a genuine pleasure and an honor because, like I say, your music throughout Bullet's career, throughout this fucking band, all of it is just top notch. And yeah, you helped shape my musical journey over your drumming tracks over the years. So thank you, mate. This has been a fucking legendary opportunity. Thank you.
Cool, man. Thank you very much for having me. See you in a bit.
Awesome. Speak soon, everybody.